We are going to continue on page Kuf Memchet Amud Aleph, 148 Aleph. We finished and continued today with a story that Rabbi Yitzchak went to have it bodedut, and he was sitting next to a cave where a father and two kids approached, and he heard the two kids talking. And it was very, very hot, and one kid said, "The heat is coming from the south." And the other kid said, "It's because of the wind that the heat is not completely destroying us, because the wind cools down the heat." And then one of them said that the wind is what will cause the world to sustain, because other than that, the world will not sustain without the wind. And we were explaining how the same way that the wind is a manifestation from the Sfira of the Tiferet, that is making peace between Gvura and Chesed. So the same way that it's causing the world above to sustain, same thing in the world below. And this is where we concluded this story. But the story is not over so fast. The story has much more to it. I think it will take us another day or two to go through the information, so we can understand what is the story trying to teach us and how is that connected to Yaakov. Where we already gave our first explanation yesterday, that when Yaakov put the stones around his head, he already chose specific 12 particular stones. This is not just some stones that he found on the floor. These are precious stones that later on were selected to be in the breastplate. And we already gave the information yesterday, no need to repeat it, especially that we want to go through some, at least two pages, so we can get to the point, because he goes in and explains a whole different topic in order for us to understand this idea between these, the conversation of these two kids about the wind. So without wasting any more time, let's continue with the story. Again, page 148a, if you want to follow, it starts with Amar le Achua Ze'era, the younger brother answered the other brother, Ilma le Yaakov lo itkayem alma. Without Yaakov, the world will not be existing even, or will not sustain, because the world needs to be sustained, not only to be created. And not only that, the older brother said that it's the wind, that because of the wind the world is sustained. The younger brother says it's also because of Yaakov. If Yaakov would not be part of the world, then the world will not sustain. Why? Kmo sheYaakov haElyon hu sodat tiferet, because Yaakov is the supreme Yaakov, the Yaakov of the world above, is the secret of the Sfira of Tiferet that brings peace in the world above between Gvura and Chesed. The same way Yaakov, the lower Yaakov, the Yaakov in this world, he brings peace into the world, and the world is able to be sustained because of him. How is that possible? Tachazi, come and see. Beshata de Yachadu Benoi Yehuda Dilaila. At the time when there's a Yehud, when there's a unity in the world above, by the sons of Yaakov. If you remember, and we're going to read that in a few weeks, when Yaakov came to rebuke the tribes right before he died, then it says that he wanted to tell them when Mashiach is coming. He had the date. He had the itinerary. He knew from the travel agent exactly when Mashiach is landing, with no delays. So he came to tell them, by the way, let me tell you when Mashiach is coming. And the second that he was about to tell them when Mashiach is coming, it says, "V'miyad nistalka da'ato." Right away, whoop, he got confused a little bit, and whoop, he forgot. Now Yaakov is not this type of individual that something splits his mind, or how do you say, slips his mind. Rather, he made a quick calculation. What is going to be the benefit if he tells them that Mashiach is coming or not? But nevertheless, he then for one second, he thought that there's a blemish in one of the kids, that they did some type of a sin, that because of their sin, the Shekhinah was removed from him. So he wasn't able to see when Mashiach is coming. So he told them, "Are you all kosher before I open up my mouth?" He told him, "Shema Israel, listen, Israel." I mean, Yaakov's name is Israel. They told him, "Shema Israel, listen, Israel. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Our God is one God." So he answered quietly, instead of saying, "Baruch Hashem," he said, "Baruch Hashem, Kod Machvoto L'Olam V'Ed." That's where we get it from. Because he asked them, is any of you thinking in 1 second that there's another God in the universe? So they told him, whoa, whoa, whoa. Shema Yisrael, listen. Shem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Our God is one God. So he wanted to answer out loud, Baruch Shem Kod Machuto Lolam Ved, but that wouldn't be respecting Moshe Rabbeinu. That would actually be disrespecting Moshe Rabbeinu, because it was Moshe Rabbeinu that says Baruch Shem Kod Machuto Lolam Ved. So he didn't want to chas v'shalom disrespect Moshe Rabbeinu, the giver, the receiver and the giver of the Torah. So he whispered it, Baruch Shem Kod Machuto, saying, okay, Baruch Hashem. Therefore, we whisper Baruch Shem Kol Malchuto L'Olam Ve'ed, and only one time in the year we say it out loud, and that's on Yom Kippur. So that's when Moshe Rabbeinu said that. But nevertheless, when the tribes said Shema Yisrael El Shem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, we do know that Shema Yisrael is called Yichud. It's a unity. That's why we end by saying Echad. The Zohar explained that Shema Yisrael is Yichud Ha'ila'ah, Yichud, a unity in the world above, and Baruch Shem Kol Malchuto is Yichud Atata, a unity in the world below. And I'm sure some of you, if you learn Likutei Moharan or the Book of Tanya, it's talking about this Yichud Ha'ila'ah and Yichud Atata. Now we see the source when the Zohar says, "What is this Yichud Ha'ila'ah? The unity from the world above is that the Shvatim in the world above they get united, and when we say Baruch Shem Kol Malchuto L'Olam Ve'ed is when the unity is becoming from the world below. So he says here, come and see." When does a yichud, a unity between the boys of Yaakov in the world above, ve'amru Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and when they say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, da hu shelimu ila'a li'ityachada b'yichud ada. This is the ultimate completion of the supreme and exalted unity, that through that all the partzufim, all the faces in the world of Atzilut can get united as one. This is our main point in this world when we do mitzvot, is to cause unity in the world above. There's no greater joy and happiness when you do unity. Now, a very good friend of mine just this morning sent me a video of his daughter. She got married. Ooh, what a simcha and a big event and very beautiful. And what was interesting that I played the video and I started hearing the tune of Im Ishkachech Yerushalayim. So, you know, I wanted to see, he's a good friend of mine, I wanted to see the video, and suddenly I hear a familiar voice singing, Im Ishkachech Yerushalayim. So I tell my wife, that sounds like Yaakov Shweke. She looks in the video, she says, it is. So, nevertheless, there was a beautiful wedding, and I looked, I was so happy to see, he's a friend of mine. They're also from the Syrian community. I'm Syrian. Nevertheless, it was nice to see, you know, my wife. We looked at the daughter, the simcha. There's no greater joy when you see a simcha, especially when you know that somebody goes through something. And then finally, after 2-3 years of a little bit of a headache, suddenly you see joy. You see the parents are smiling, excited, crying. And there's no greater joy when you see unity. Now, this is one type of unity, a wedding, but there are many types of unities. Same thing here. When there's unity in the world above, there's no greater joy from that. Therefore, when we can derive from that, when Hashem sees in this world when there's disunity, when there's a disagreement or an argument, or chas v'shalom, a fight, it's the biggest pain Hashem can feel. When we get along with each other, we can melt Hashem's heart. When we don't get along with each other, this is literally a slap to Hashem's face. So it says here that when there's a unity in the world above, and this is the complete, the ultimate unity in the world above, is when all the partzufim, all the faces of the world of Atzilut, they get united. This is a very, very hard thing to cause. That's why we do mitzvot. The mitzvot is the way of creating unity. Keden itchabar Yaakov avuhan. When there's a unity in the world above, then Yaakov, their father, is able to connect with all the tribes. Venatil beite, and he takes his house. And what's the house of Yaakov? It's the Malchut. It's called the Bet HaMalchut, the house of the Malchut. Ve'yativ ve'bichibur achada, and he sits, Yaakov sits with the ultimate unity with the house of Yaakov, which is the Malchut. Ve'yesheva b'chibur echad b'sod ha'yichud, and he sits with her. Now, if you remember, we learned a couple times. Now we're learning it from the parasha. Yaakov married two women. Later on, it was four women, but he first wanted to marry Rachel. Then he actually married first Leah and then Rachel. Rachel and Leah are the two spiritual mothers that we have. Rachel is called Ima Tata'a, the lower level mother, which is the Malchut. And Leah is called Ima Ira'a, the higher level mother, and she's Bina. The idea is that Yaakov constantly needs to come to a... Yaakov is the Zeir Anpin, is Tiferet, that gives the Shefa into the Zeir Anpin, to the Sfirot. And the ultimate unity is when Yaakov has unity with Rachel, and then they're able to elevate this energy to the Ima Ila'a, to the Supreme Mother, which is Leah. Therefore, first of all, Yaakov had to marry Leah, even though he wanted to marry Rachel. He wanted to marry right away Rachel to get done with the job. But according to Kabbalah, he first had to have the real marriage with Leah. Then you go and marry Rachel to be able to elevate it. But nevertheless, when there's a unity in the world above, then Yaakov is able to leityached, to become united with Rachel, with the Malchut. Vayeshev ba bechibur echad besod ha'ichud, and then he sits with the Malchut in as one. Im ahavan, but when there's a unity between Yaakov and Rachel in the world above, what's the ultimate unity? That Yaakov gets united with Avram and Yitzchak, which Avram and Yitzchak is the chesed and gvura. Hashem created the world with many different midot. Now we have chesed on one side and gvura on the other side, and they don't get along together. We said that yesterday, Yoseh Shalom Bimromav. When Yaakov is able to come to the ultimate yuchud with Rachel, he's able to make unity between chesed and gvura. Leitchabra dechar venukva kechada, to connect the female and the male together, is called yichud zun, the unity of the female and the male. And by that, that's how the world will sustain itself. If not, the world will not exist. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak said, Eshtataf behadaya ve'eshma maika amrei. Let me listen what these two boys are saying. Oh, they're saying something very sweet here. They might look like regular boys, but they say something very, very deep here. Let me participate in this conversation and hear what they have to say. Why? Ki en midrash belo chidush. There's no such a thing that somebody will say a drasha on the Torah, and there's no chidush there. There's no something new for me to hear. Azal behadayu, and he went to hear what they have to say. So this is another lesson that we need to learn, that even if you know a lot of Torah, and somebody else comes and says something, maybe that somebody will say something you never heard. Don't think that because you know some Torah, then chas v'shalom to disqualify somebody else, you might find out a gem or two by somebody else. Now, we said a little idea from the Zohar. Just to recap it, we have two kids that are saying that the heat is way too strong coming from the south. And Baruch Hashem, there's wind because the wind chills it. And the wind is the source of the existence of the world. Where the other brother says, no, you're right, but it's because of Yaakov that the world exists. This is the parable or the message, the mystical message behind what they're trying to say. Now let's see what it really means. Now he says, in order for us to really understand what it means, you have to be patient a day or two till we go through what he wants to say. We have to understand something else. Lavin ma'amar rabba, nakdim ma shekatuv. In order to understand this ma'amar, let's first understand what it says in the book of Shmuel, specifically in the book of Shmuel Aleph. שדוד המלך וכל ישראל העלו את אהרון מן בית עובד אדום הגיתי בשמחה. דוד המלך and the rest of his people, they brought out the ark from the house of Oved Edom. This was a certain individual. His name was Oved. And when they brought it out from his house, they brought it בשמחה. Now, ויביאו את אהרון אלוקים, they took the ark of Hashem, ויציגו אותו בתוך אוהל, and they made a tent for it, and they put the ark in the middle. אשר נתן לו דוד בעיר דוד. David built a certain tent. David didn't have the merit to build the Bet HaMikdash. Rather, he created the foundation. He got the funding. He got the blessing. Everything. He prepared everything. So, you know, in order to bring Bet HaMikdash, you have to bring first Aaron HaKodesh. ואז לפני שאלו את Aaron, before they brought up the ark, אמר דוד, what did David say? קום השם למנוחתך, אתה ואהרון עוזך. One of the verses, I'm sure you're familiar, we just said that in Simchat Torah. What is this verse? Kuma Hashem lemnuchatecha, rise up Hashem, but for your resting place. I mean, the Aaron was the resting place, where it will be forever. Ata, you, ve'aron uzecha, and the ark of your might. David HaMelech says, Hashem, I'm glad to announce that finally after so long, I found the place of resting. This is where the ark is going to rest for eternity. Shehu sod yichud zon. This is the secret of the unity of zachar v'nekeva, female and male, in the world above. How is that done? Sheneasah al yadei shiviyut Aaron lemakom nuchato. By bringing the ark to the place where it's supposed to be dwelling for the very eternity, it's causing a unity in the world above. Why? Ki Aaron usod malchut. This ark is the secret behind the idea of malchut. V'haluchot. Now, what's in the ark? There's the Luchot HaBrit, right? The tablets. V'asefer Torah. And the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. Just imagine how it looks. Very soon we're going to see it. Can you imagine the Sefer Torah written with the hand of Moshe Rabbeinu, the ink that Hashem provided? This is not Stam Sefer Torah. I told you already the story. If you remember in the book of Vayikra, when you open the Sefer, the Aleph of Vayikra is a very small Aleph. It's called Aleph Ze'ira, small Aleph. Why is that? Okay, many different drashot. Moshe was humble, so he wanted to be also humble and so forth. Many, many beautiful explanations. But the I can't say the right explanation, they're all right. But the reason why the Aleph is small is when Moshe Rabbeinu was writing the Torah, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is talking and Moshe Rabbeinu was writing. Then he gets to the point of Vayikra. Vayikra Hashem el Moshe Lemor. So Moshe said, listen, Hashem, with all the respect, I love you, but how can I put in the Torah Vayikra? It's not, I feel embarrassed. Like, were you my friend? And Hashem called me. I'm not your friend, I'm your servant. I think it's not appropriate that you would write in the Torah Vayikra. Say Vayomer, Vayidaber, Vayikra. It sounds too friendly. And then people will interpret, Moshe Rabbeinu had an in with Hashem. How about you just let's just write Vayikar. And you know where you find the word Vayikar? Whenever Hashem calls a wicked person, with Bilam and many others. Look in Bilam, this is Vayikar, Hashem el Bilam. And we find in the Torah that Hashem called a few wicked ones. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, right, just let's write Vayikar. Hashem says, what do you think? This is something to negotiate here? There's precise letters in the Torah. I can't remove an Aleph. I'm going to be missing an Aleph. It's going to mess up the whole Torah. So Hashem says, what do you want me to do? So Moshe says, I have a great idea. Why don't you write the Aleph very, very small so we're not going to see it? So Hashem says, you know, fine, let's write the Aleph small. But now we have a problem. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was the scribe and the ink was provided by the master of the universe. And it's not like a sofer in our generation that buys a lot of ink and starts writing. And if he runs out of ink, he buys more ink. Here the ink was exactly precise on the milliliter, however you say. So now there's a problem. The Aleph is smaller, so we're left with a little bit of ink. What did Hashem do? He took that little bit of the ink and he rubbed it on Moshe Rabbeinu's face. That's why when he went down from the mountain, what does he say? Vayikran or panav. His face was radiating from light. So this little bit of ink that was left was smeared on Moshe Rabbeinu's face. Moshe Rabbeinu's face became a projector that for 40 years nobody was able to look at his face. Moshe Rabbeinu had a veil. Nobody was able to look at him. And only when he walked into Oel Moed, to the tent, then Moshe Rabbeinu would pick up the veil. But no man would be able to look in Moshe Rabbeinu's face. Why? Because Hashem smeared the ink on his face. Nevertheless, just imagine the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. So in the ark, we have on one side the ark, the tablets, on the other side, the Sefer Torah. What are these two? Hem sod ha-Zeir Anpin. This is the secret of the Zeir Anpin. Zeir Anpin means a small face. What does it mean to us? It's the six firot in the world of Atzilut. Chesed Gvorat Tiferet, Netzach Hod Yesod. Lachen bikesh David sheyakum Aaron. That's why David asked for the ark to rise up. Can you imagine all these visions? You see David HaMelech telling the ark to arise, and the ark rises above the ground. If we would see something like this right now, I think some people would have to be lose their mind. They have to be instituted. But nevertheless, David HaMelech says to the ark, Kum Hashem lemnuchatech. The ark rises up above the ground with the Sefer Torah in it. Hainu, what does that mean? Shehiyu yecholim lehavi oto l'ir David. Nobody was able to move it. Even if you would bring a forklift, you would bring a crane, nobody was able to move the ark. Not because it was heavy, because it was holy. So David HaMelech had to request the ark to be elevated above the ground so they can move it to the city of David. Letoch ha'oel asher nata, in order to bring it into the tent where he built, shu bet menuchato, that's his dwelling place. You think anybody can just come and pick up that ark? Even if now, hypothetically, somebody would find it. You think they were just able to move it? That brings us a huge question, because one opinion says, where's this ark right now? One opinion says that Titus took it. That when he came to destroy the Beit HaMikdash, I mean, we knew he took with him a lot of stuff. The menorah and many other vessels. The one opinion says he took the ark too. And it's probably sitting in one of the basements of the Vatican. And with many other things. One opinion says no. The ark he wasn't able to take. It's buried somewhere in the bottom, somewhere. We don't even know. Now they're finding all these tunnels and all these underground cities. There's much more. And it's probably hidden somewhere over there. But two different opinions, we don't know. Very soon Mashiach will come, we'll see exactly where the ark is. But nevertheless, nobody can just move the ark. Now, David the Melech had to say a few holy words, the ark rose above the ground and they were able to move it. As this is happening, David the Melech says, Kohanecha el Bashut Tzedek, your Kohanim, your priest, will wear righteousness on them. V'chasidecha yeranunu, and your chasidim, your followers, will join with joy. This is the time shehechlif et hakohanim sheyesharu lifnei Aaron bemekom haleviim. This is the time when David the Melech switched the Kohanim and the Leviim. This time the Kohanim were singing. Ki sham haya az bama ktana. They built a little stage and the priests started singing. Aval habama gdola hayta begivon. The big stage they built in a city called Givon. As it says in the book of Melachim, chapter 3, and so forth. Vayelech Shlomo Givona lizvoach sham ki hu habama gdola. That's what it says in the book of Melachim, that Shlomo Melech went to the place of Givon to bring sacrifices and so forth. Now, in order to understand this ma'amar of the Zohar, we had to give this little intro about the Aaron Kodesh and David HaMelech. Now, let's see. Patachahu Barnash ve'amar. If you remember, we have Rabbi Yitzchak that's sitting in the cave. And then we have two boys. Now they also have a father. That's what we read yesterday. The father of those two boys opened up his mouth and he started explaining what does it mean when David HaMelech says, Kuma Hashem lemnuchatecha, ata v'aron uzecha. This is another verse that we know coming from Tehillim, from the Torah. This can be found in the book of Bamidbar, another verse that we say in Simchat Torah. Kuma Hashem, no, sorry. Mixing up the verses. Kuma Hashem lenuchatecha is from Tehillim, Kuf Lamed Bet, 132, verse 8. Techev will learn about another verse. But nevertheless, this verse, this father is about to explain it. And he says, David HaMelech says, Kuma Hashem lenuchatecha, rise above Hashem to the place where you have to rest. Kema'an de'amar yakum malka levin naicha de'mishkane. The same one, like the same one that tells the king to rise above so he can go to the place of the queen. That's where he dwells. Where does the king dwell? Where the queen is. He has to go to the queen. The same way, Ken Bikesh David, that's how David HaMelech asked Hashem, Sheyakum, rise above, meaning to come and unite with the Malchut. Malchut is the queen. That's why we say, L'shem Yichud Kutcha, for the sake of the unity of Kutcha Brichu Shchinteh, for the unity of the Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Shechina, the Malchut, Shei Bet Menuchato, that's where the king dwells. Now he stops for a second to explain this verse, in order to explain the difference between the time when Moshe Rabbeinu says, Kum Hashem Lenuchatecha, and when David HaMelech said that. Twice then we found this verse. One time Moshe Rabbeinu said that, and one time David HaMelech said that. And this is the verse, Kuma Hashem lemnuchatecha, ata v'aron lovecha. Moshe v'David, and that's what it says, Train inun havu de'amru kuma Hashem, kuma Hashem. Two people we know that they said, Kuma Hashem, Hashem, rise above. Moshe v'David, these are the two people who said that. Moshe amar kuma Hashem v'efutzu evecha. Moshe Rabbeinu in the book of Bamidbar, Chapter 10, it says, Kuma Adonai ve'yafutzu evecha, ve'yanusu mesanecha mepanecha. Right? That's what we say also when we open the ark. Nevertheless, that's when Moshe Rabbeinu said that. Ve'David amar, David HaMelech says, Kuma Hashem lemnuchatecha, ata v'aron uzecha. So twice we see that two leaders, two kings, Moshe was a king, and David was a king. They both asked Hashem, rise above and go to a different place.
The second was the one?
The second one is Tehillim. It's Tehillim Kuf Lamed Bet, 132, verse 8. That's when David HaMelech said that. And Moshe Rabbeinu said that in the book of Bamidbar, chapter 10, Kuma Hashem ve'yafutzu evecha ve'yanusu mesanecha mepanecha. My Ika Benaihu. What's the difference between when Moshe Rabbeinu says that and David HaMelech says that? Ela, Moshe kema'an defagid lebeita ke'amar. Moshe was the husband of the matronita, of the queen. Why? Because the malchut, Moshe Rabbeinu says, diber im ha-malchut kmo adam ha-metzoveh et beito et kol asher yechefatz. Moshe Rabbeinu would talk to the malchut like as if he's like me and you. That's the only prophet that spoke with the Shechina, like face to face. Therefore, Moshe pakid le'agacha karva lekabel sanoi. Moshe gave a commandment to do war, so to say, to the malchut with the enemies. And so he says, Kuma Hashem ve'yafutzu evecha, rise above Hashem, ve'yafutzu evecha, scare off all your enemies. Right? So Moshe Rabbeinu was said to gave an order to the Malchut, rise above so you can win over your enemies. Hine al af she'ah tzirich lifaresh koma, Kuma Hashem al zot amar. Nevertheless, Moshe Rabbeinu had to say such a thing. לפי שיש טעם פסיק בין מילת קומה לבין הוויה. If you're looking at the verse between the word קומה, rise above, and the word Hashem, קומה Hashem למנוחתך, it's written as יודקי ובקי, there's a comma. Why? נמצא שאינה משמש לה. We learned from that Moshe Rabbeinu was not a servant of the Shechina. So he was able to say, אמר שמילת קומה נאמרה על המלכות. קומה goes on the מלכות. Moshe told the מלכות to rise above. Therefore, also the word Yud Kei Vav Kei that comes after that, it's referring to the Malchut. So we see here that Moshe Rabbeinu was referring to the Malchut. Moshe Rabbeinu was the king at the time, and he ordered the Malchut to do so. Now, what is the meaning of the word Kuma? Kuma means get up, basically, in other words. Hainu, kum, get up. Kum Hashem, Hashem, get up. Shehi hei achonad Hashem avaya. Now look at the word, how do you say get up in Hebrew? Kum. Kuf vav mem. Why is it says kuma? With a hey. So exactly. The hey, which is the last hey of Shem avaya. This is the malchut. If you're looking at yud kei vav kei, yud is chokma, right? The first hey is bina, vav is the ziran pin, and the last hey is malchut. So Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu says kum, hey, kuma. The hay of the Malchut should rise above. Now, why specifically the Malchut? Shehamalchut takum lilachem im ha'oivim. That the Malchut should come and fight the enemies. You don't fight. Hashem ilachem lachem v'atem tacharushun. Hashem is your, he's the one who fights for you. You don't fight. If you take the fight on yourself, then Hashem says, okay, let's see you win. That's why in anything in life, if you let Hashem take care of business, then that's much better. If you think that you should fight, then you see that you're going with your powers. Where Hashem tells you, let me fight your war. Why are you trying even? Now, this is Moshe Rabbeinu. On the other side, we have David. David zamin l'denaycha kama dezamnin l'mare. Moshe Rabbeinu, we just concluded, gave a commandment to the Malchut, rise above, so you go and fight your enemies. David HaMelech, on the other hand, David HaMelech was rooted from the sphere of Malchut. And it says, David Shah Mushrash Bamalchut Diber Rak Betfila V'Tachanunim. David HaMelech just said a prayer. And Tachanun is a kind of a request or a begging or whatever it is. Lehazmin et Azir and Pim and Muchato. David HaMelech just asked the Malchut to come. He begged, come to the place where you have to dwell. לגרום שיתייחד עם המלכות, to cause a unity with the מלכות. כמו אדם שמזמין את אדונו לביתו, like a person that invites his master to his own home, not to the one that invites. It's like a shed, like a madman, a king hires you as a contractor to build a palace, you finish the construction after a year, then you go to the king and you say, my master, please, the house is ready, come, I will show you around, let me show you the switchboard. So David HaMelech was inviting the master to come and dwell in his own home. Umamshich, and he continues, ואמר כי דוד, what did David do? זמין למלכה ולמטרוניתה אימה. David invited the king and the queen together, saying in other words, את הארון עם הספר תורה. You have the ark on one side and the Sefer Torah inside. This is the secret of the unity of the Zun, of Zachar and Nekeva. David HaMelech wanted to invite Hashem and the queen, the Shechinah, come and dwell in the house that I'm going to build for you. Hadeo dichtiv, as it says, Kuma Hashem lemnuchatecha, ata ve'aharon uzecha. It's not Aharon. Some people say Aharon uzecha. It's Aharon uzecha. That's now in Simchat Torah, I was hearing everybody saying, Ve'aharon uzecha. It's not Aharon, it's Aharon uzecha. Aharon is the priest, Aharon is an ark. Therefore, David HaMelech says, Kuma Hashem lenuchatecha, Hashem rise above and come to the place where you will dwell and rest, Ata, you, the king, Ve'aharon uzecha, and the ark of your might, where the Sefer Torah is. Kuma goes on the Zeir Anpin, that this is the secret of the name of Havaya, and the ark, Aharon Uzecha, the ark of might, Shua Malchut, this is the Malchut, Sheyavo el Makom Menucham Beir David, come and rest in the place of the city of David. Umach Shechazar Lomar Milat Ata, and why does he say the word again, Ata, you? Ki Lechora Yatzich Lomar, Kuma Hashem Lemuchatecha Ve'Aharon Uzecha. Technically, he should have said, rise above Hashem and the ark. Why does he say the word Ata, you? Ela, begin the light parshalon, in order not to separate between the female and the male. Lachen chazar lomar, ata ve'aharon uzecha. Ata is the male, is the kadosh baruch hu, kodesh baruch hu. Uzecha is the ark, the malchut, the female. Lorot shem tamid biyichud echad, to show that they're constantly in one unity. Saying in other words, ki bevadai afilu be'et agalut, even though at the time of exile, yesh ezu b'chinat yichud zun. Even at the time of exile, there's a unity between the female and the male. This is called Yichud Zun. Lachen afilu bevet oved Edom, Hagiti. Even at when the ark was sitting at the house of Edom, of oved Edom, haya Aharon yachad im haSefer Torah besod Yichud. Even then, the Sefer Torah was still in the ark. Aval David ratza lavi et Aharon leir David. David HaMelech wanted to bring the ark into the city of David. Shei makom meula yoter. This is the place where it's befitting for the ark to be. Lefi shehu sod haMalchut. David is the secret of Malchut. Shesham yeh yichud gamur. There is going to be ultimate unity. This is kind of going to explain to us, which I'm not going to get into it, but we just talked about it last week, so I want to reiterate for the ones that heard about it. We talked about last week in one of the Zohar classes how David HaMelech complained to Hashem that his name is not mentioned in Shmona Esrei when we say Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. And I mentioned the Talmud that says that David HaMelech complained to Hashem, and Hashem told him, because I didn't test you. David HaMelech asked for a test, and right away Bathsheba came. For us, as humans, it seems like a sin. But after the class, I explained that David HaMelech was in such a high level, and for him to unite with Bathsheba was bringing the unity between Kodesh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah, and bringing the Geulah, bringing the redemption. David HaMelech was in such a high level, he didn't see Bathsheba as a woman, a naked woman on the roof. Rather, we know that when Mashiach comes, it says Al Gag Bet HaMikdash. Mashiach comes on the roof of Bet HaMikdash. He saw the woman, he saw the Shekhinah. In his level, he understood that this is an auspicious time to bring the redemption. He sees the Shekhinah on the top of the roof, and by having unity with her, he will bring the manifestation into the world. So in his world, in his level, it wasn't even a sin. We see it as a sin. But nevertheless, let's just read the...
The son died.
Yeah.
Does that apply to, Tamar and Yehuda?
No. That's just with David HaMelech. David HaMelech was in a very high level at that time. He had a Ruach HaKodesh. He saw already things. He saw already the future, what the future can bring. For him, he was already living at the time of the Geulah, of the redemption. Some people... In our generation, many others, they already live in the time of redemption. The problem that we are the problem. David HaMelech didn't have that problem.
Why?
That's for us to see that there's a result as a sin. But nevertheless, let's use this a little part, and then the rest we'll do tomorrow, and then we can conclude and see how it's settling everything and explaining it in a beautiful way, the idea of these two boys. But let's just read a little bit. מה שכתוב בניצז כהנך ילבשו צדק וחסידך ירננו. Your priests should wear righteousness, and חסידך, your followers, your חסידים, ירננו, should rejoice. מכאן, from here we learn, ולפנה, דמן דמיזמן למלכה ישנה, עובדוי. From here we learn that anyone that invites the king to his home, ישנה את מנהגי המלך שיהיו מכובדים יותר. You have to apply the change that for the king it will be more befitting. Saying in other words, we don't invite kings into our home, but I want to invite Hashem into my home. Some homes you go in, you feel the Shekhinah, you feel holiness. Some homes you go in, you feel nothing. Some homes you go in, you want to run away from them. I want to invite Hashem into my home, so I have to make it appropriate for Hashem to dwell there. Can have all sorts of things that are not appropriate for Hashem. I'm not talking about now statues of idol worship, but the place has to be with the mezuzot, and a place of mitzvot, and a kosher kitchen, and everything has to be kosher in my home. If I want Hashem to dwell in my home, the home has to be kosher. Now kosher, not because I eat the home, because everything has to be kosher there. So if this is a home where there's a disagreement, and arguments, and lying, and cheating, and chas v'shalom, bad things, then how will Hashem dwell in your home? Same thing here. So we learn from this verse that when a person wants to invite a king into the home, he has to change the place that it will be fitting for the king. ובגין למהב חדווה דמלכה, in order to cause happiness to the king. Here he said that David המלך said that כהנך ילבשו צדק, when he wanted to invite Hashem to come into the city of David. But again, we're taking the verses and we see how they're applying to us. We want to cause the simcha, happiness to the king. אי ארכה דמלכה דחדן לבדיחי הדיוטי. If the way of the king is a certain way, then I have to make the king happy in the way of how one makes the king happy. It's not about me. יסדר כמה בדיחי רופינוס ופרדשכי. Then you, the same way that when a king comes, you know who you invite to your home, ministers and great people. Same thing here. I want to invite the king into my home. The home has to be appropriate for the king to walk in. וילאב, and if I won't do such a thing, לאב איהו בדיחו דמלכה. Then first, Hashem is not going to be the king is not going to be happy there. And needless to say, why should he come into to my home? So if I want to have Hashem coming into my home, I have to make the home appropriate. I can't expect Hashem to dwell into my home. You know, there's a funny term in English that in Hebrew that an Israeli rabbi said. When he once was approached by a few women about dress modest. So he told the women, what do you want in your home? And one woman said about dressing modest, if she should dress modest or not. So he told her, what do you want in your home? The Shekhinah or the Shekhinah? You want in your home the Shekhinah or the neighbor? So you want the Shekhinah in your home, it has to be modesty. You want the neighbor to come in, then don't bring modesty into the home. So it's modesty, it's not only outside in the street, it's how you behave in the home. How women walk in the home. A woman, technically, in the home, the tzniut is for the outside world, but the tzniut, the modesty of a woman has to be also in the home. I know many women that they only cover their hair when they go out to the street. But you want to go beyond the letter of the law, you cover your hair also in the house, where you want a holy house. So you can't expect the Shekhinah, the manifestation of the holy female aspect of the divine to come into your home if the home is lying and cheating and Lashon Hara and so many things. Somebody told me not too long ago that a certain home, they have a lot of mice there. And what does it mean? And I said, I read once, I don't remember where, I just read once that when there's a mice in the home, means the father or the mother, whoever does business there is not doing business honest. Maybe cheating, maybe not paying their taxes, maybe they fail with gezel, when there's mice in the house. And sometimes somebody not too long ago asked me if there's a scorpio in the home, what does it mean? I mean, nothing happens by chance. There's a bee in the home, but nevertheless, with mice, so I don't remember the source, but I said, from what I remember, when there's thief stealing in any type of a way, then a mouse will come into the home. A mice or mouse. But nevertheless, some houses you walk in and you feel the holiness dripping from the walls. And some houses you walk in, you want to throw up the second you walked in there. So you want your house to be holy. You want the Shekhinah to be in your home. But how would the Shekhinah be in your home when you behave in not the appropriate way? So again, I like taking the verses with the Zohar is interpreting and explaining to us, but how is it affecting me? So I want my house to be holy. It starts with the external part of the house, with mezuzot, and having the right appropriate things. You don't want the pictures of the wall to be not modest. You want pictures of tzaddikim or great holy sites or whatever it is that you want to have, or whatever it is. But how the house is, that's how it's going to affect the energy of the house. And don't think for one second that the energy of the house will not affect the person. You have holy energy in the house, then it does affect the person. And vice versa, there's unholy energy in the house, then it's also going to affect the person to be edgy, upset, sad, whatever it is, depressed, happy, and so forth. Internet and many other improper things. So...